Welcome back to Hill Country Institute Live, Exploring Christ and Culture. This is Larry Linenschmidt, and with me today we have Walter Bradley and Dan Hines, two scientists, two Christians, two people who've struggled with the questions to put it all together, I think, in a way that can be helpful to all of us as we talk to our friends and try to understand our culture and the things that consistently come at us. So, gentlemen, we've talked about God, we've talked about nature, we've talked about science, we've talked about the human condition, our beauty being made in the image of God, and our fallenness as fallen beings. So how do we put that together? How does science help us to know? How does science deter us from knowing? What can we say to try to wrap it up in a way that pulls some of these pieces and loose ends together?
Yeah, for me, Larry, one of the things that has been interesting to observe over the decades that I've been kind of in the science and technology area is that it was the people that retained enthusiasm that really ended up to be the best scientists. And that many of those, it was because they had purpose beyond their science. And I think that's just what Walter was sharing earlier about seeing God's creation as the glorious, beautiful, exciting playground in which to discover, in fact. And it was recently illustrated by me just a week or two ago. I went to the American Astronomical Society meeting, and the first day, everybody was excited. They're talking, chatting, chattering. I mean, just it was great. And I just enjoyed some of the discoveries that were shared there about clouds on distant planets. They can actually start predicting the weather a little bit, and really cool things. But as the days went on, some of the people still retained their excitement, but some who seemed to be trying to create their own meaning from these discoveries that they made were getting tired and not reflecting the enthusiasm that they had. They'd given their talks, maybe they'd been well received, but it didn't fully fulfill them. Mm-hmm. Without the basis of Christ to give us the glory of what's around us, of what's in us, and also to protect us from the negative that is in us, it doesn't work.
Well, it makes me think of Larry Crabb. He has a model where we think a new house will satisfy us. And you get the new house, it doesn't. So you get a boat, or your third child, or whatever it may be. And there's this ongoing circular thing going on with us where we think that next thing will satisfy us. And I think what you're saying is that even a accomplished scientist doesn't find ultimate meaning in his discoveries and his work.
Just operationally.
Yeah.
It's not sufficient to give us sufficient meaning in life.
And yet, let me just camp on the career thing just a minute. There's a song, don't let your mamas grow up to be cowboys. Now, you wouldn't feel that way about young people going into science, would you?
No.
I wouldn't, but I think whether it's science or some other career, I think our relationship with God can help us to sort of put that in the bigger context so we can lead a balanced life, Larry. And as I look back at my own career, I was very, very driven as a young person. I grew up in a relatively, not absolutely, but relatively poor family, and I felt like I want to be successful. I want to have a lot of the stuff that I've never had growing up, and I paid my way through school. I got a fellowship to go to graduate school, and I had a rocket in my pocket. I was really wanting to get out as quickly as I could and go out and make a fortune and be famous,
Right. Mm-hmm.
And during my period of time, late in my undergraduate days and early graduate school days, I came into a much more personal relationship with Christ that really reprioritized my life in a way that was extremely healthy. I did manage to get my PhD by the time I was 24 and was a tenured associate professor by the time I was 27. So I was very focused on being successful. But if I had continued to keep the priorities that I had had prior to developing this close relationship with Christ, I'm sure I would have been so dedicated to my pursuit of success that I would have neglected my wife, probably ended up with a divorce. I would have neglected my children.
Yes.
They probably would have ended up going off and having a train wreck. And at the end of the day, all of the money and all of the awards or accolades that I might have achieved would have been worth almost zero.
Yes.
If at the price to pay was that, in a sense, I'd given up my soul, I'd given up my family, I'd given up those things that really give life meaning and purpose. And I think financial success, professional success, and fame and fortune can act as a certain motivator for our lives and give a certain kind of meaning, but it's insufficient.
Right.
And that unless I can find a deeper meaning and purpose to the things I'm doing, these things will eventually, not immediately, but eventually prove to be empty.
Right.
And disappointing. And I've worked with a lot of people that made that mistake and live to regret it, because they end up in their 60s and, yeah, they publish lots of papers. Who cares when you published 150 papers if you publish another one? So what?
Right.
But when you have missed out on those more important relationships with your family, with God, with other people, that I think are the salt and pepper of life, then the other doesn't substitute.
Yes. And my story is similar.
And
we often say within the family that if I hadn't married Judith, I'd be dead now, because I would have worked myself into the grave.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so now the relationships flourish.
Yeah.
The science flourishes right now.
Yeah.
In my life, because I have a real foundation, and it isn't science.
Yeah. It's interesting. When I was department head of mechanical engineering at Texas A&M for a time, and I had 67 faculty that worked for me, and I used to do annual reviews every year. And I would try to make these guys take their vacation days. They could accumulate unused vacation days to a point and roll them over. But then they would reach the limit, and now they were going to use them or lose them, and they were still acting like, I don't have time, I can't do this, and so forth. And I would tell them, look, you're like the guy who's chopping wood with an axe. It's very dull. And you can chop a lot of hours and not get much wood chopped. What you need to do is to go sharpen your axe.
Yeah.
And come back refreshed. When you're doing research, you need to be creative. You need to be, and you can't do that by keeping your nose to the grindstone all the time. So
yes.
I think Christian faith brings to the practice of scientific pursuits a balance in life that allows us to be all that God intended for us to be. And sometimes by not having that balance, we not only miss out on the joys that brings, we actually miss out on some of the good work that might have gotten done but wasn't done.
Yes.
Because we were chopping with a dull axe.
Yes.
And you don't make many great discoveries chopping with a dull axe.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, just dozens and dozens of times I would go to bed at midnight just stumped by a programming issue. And I would wake up at 6, mm-hmm. and it would be trivial.
Mm-hmm.
And it just... And
I thought you were going to say with differential equations dancing in your head.
Not quite, no. That's not the way it worked for me.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah, nothing that you're saying, though, would should be determinant of leading one away from a career in science.
No,
I just
want to
make that clear, because that's
very
positive. You,
no,
you
no
both
regrets.
Thrived on that.
Yeah.
And,
it's God's mission to me.
Well, and the comments I'm making apply to whatever your vocation is. You can lead this one-dimensional kind of...
Okay.
Okay.
We have a question coming in. Just a second. Okay. Stan?
Yes. Hi. I just caught the tail end of your show, but I have a question.
Thank you for calling.
About science and astronomy, because like I say, I just caught you guys.
Shoot. Okay. Go right ahead. We can hear you fine.
Okay. A person like, say, Richard Dawkins, and they say, like, an evolution of things, that life ultimately has no meaning and purpose. But then why do we seek meaning and purpose if, according to the theory of evolution, life is ultimately meaningless and purposeless?
Okay. That's an excellent question.
Yeah.
Walter, would you like?
Yeah. First of all, I don't know that there's any scientific evidence that supports Dawkins' claim, okay? It's just a claim that life doesn't have meaning and purpose, but I don't think it's a claim that you can support scientifically. So I would simply say at this point that Dawkins' claim is one that because it doesn't have validity, it doesn't really concern me, because I do think life has meaning and purpose, and I think there are many alternative reasons for choosing to believe that. But I think Dawkins' claim, if you're talking about, for example, the God delusion, I don't remember, he's made that claim multiple places, probably in Blind Watchmaker as well. But I think it's often the case with Dawkins that he'll present some very good science which has some certain significance to it, maybe having to do with evolution or other things. And then he will add to that that life ultimately has no meaning and purpose except survival of the DNA, okay? I find that just to be sort of a preposterous leap of faith masquerading as some kind of a scientific claim, which I don't think it is. I'd be curious as to whether where you see the scientific basis for that claim. Are you just reciting it?
I think we've lost a caller, but I think he was just posing the question. But Walter, in terms of meaning, in terms of purpose, can science even begin to define meaning and purpose for us?
No, it's like the illustration of the water boiling and why it's boiling, and the why of how or what is quite different than the purpose, which was to make coffee. And so science helps us to explain in a very elegant way how things work, why they work the way they do. Right. But it doesn't ever explain why in the sense of what is the purpose. And so I think that's a very, very important take home from the program today.
There's an implicit thing that was worrying me in my 20s and 30s, and that is that so much of the world around us does seem to be explicable in terms of consistent laws. Mm-hmm. And so that it gives a little bit of streetwise credence to things like Dawkins' statements that there is no meaning because it's all a big big chemical physical machine, including us, which doesn't make sense at all, because then why would Dawkins argue for anything?
Sure.
Because what he is doing then, if his perspective is true, is saying only what he must say, because his atoms and molecules determine they are. But
Dawkins seems to have a very big purpose in his own life of going around trying to bash people who aren't atheists and acting like if you aren't an atheist, you're stupid. So in some sense, even in his own life, he doesn't operate in a way that's consistent with his own claims.
Right, okay? Right.
Because he very much is on a, jihad's probably not a fair term, but he basically is on a mission, okay?
Yeah.
To persuade people.
Missionary.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, I think we can agree that what Dan said earlier about a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, who is the truth, who is the way, who is the light and the life, is an answer. And I think it's an answer that we live with and cling to. So thank you both for being with us. Thank you for listening today. Again, I invite you to join us here for our Hill Country Institute Live and visit our website, hillcountryinstitute.org. Thank you very much. God be blessed.